to Follow the Sounds this week in music history, we scour the internet looking for those little facts that pertain to things in music history that you find interesting and or entertaining. I'm your host, Brian Kroc, and along with me is, of course, Jacob Crum.
Good evening.
Greg Harvey.
Good morning.
And Bree Park.
And good night.
That was so not planned, and it was awesome. Thank you, guys. You guys make this show so much fun. I get to sit here and be kind of boring for the most part, and you guys just make it so good. Thank you.
And if I don't see you.
So, this week in music history, we are covering May 22nd through May 26th. Obviously, this is what we're doing. These are the 5 days that we picked for this week. And I think we got some very, very good facts
and some very,
very interesting subjects to talk about. And of course, let's kick it all off with May 22nd.
Mm-hmm. 1813, Richard Wagner is born in Leipzig, what I would say Germany, but in 1813, Germany was not a country.
That is
this
true.
This is part of the Prussian Empire.
The Prussians. So yes, Wagner. Wagner is a very interesting dude. Had a very cool career where he wrote in not only in what would be Germany, but he wrote in places like Austria and stuff. And he wrote these really, really epic scores. And it was like through this that and like all of these different things that he had to go through trying to find kind of patronage to pay for. Him writing stuff that he really kind of defined this sound as a German composer. And this German composer then became the favorite amongst a bunch of other people, but also included among them Hitler. And Hitler used to play Wagner all the time to his troops and to other people. And he told the German people that they needed to listen to Wagner a lot as well. But we get a lot of great songs from Wagner, including like Flight of the Valkyries, which was made famous in Apocalypse Now, which is a great helicopter scene as they're all going in and blowing stuff up. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smells like victory. So, but yeah, Wagner, of course, he had his faults too. He was accused of being an anti-Semite, especially in modern age. Because he slammed a couple of Jewish composers and basically made fun of them. But he had his faults, but he was by no means like this Hitler-level racist that he sort of his music became associated with. But I still got to say, if you go back and you listen to Wagner's music, it's just crazy how awesome it actually is. So there you go. And actually, each year they host a like Wagner Days or whatever in the theater that was really built for him, and it's super super cool. And even the seats are like designed to add to the acoustic nature of the theater.
Wow!
And like they're not comfortable at all apparently, and they actually tell people like please bring like a pillow of some kind for you to sit on because they are not comfortable seats.
BYOP.
I thought you were going to say the seats were actually formed with Wagner's rear end.
No. No, that would have been funny. There's actually a really great documentary out there hosted by Stephen Fry.
Who's Wagner and Me.
Yeah. And it very, very good. It sort of showcases all of this, like his love of Wagner and talks about all these, the history where he grew up, how he developed the sounds that he did. Even his whole association with Hitler, even though he didn't live any in the same time frame at all with Hitler, and even goes down the line to where he interviews like the great great granddaughter of Wagner, and it's a really cool documentary. Check it out sometime if you get a chance.
There's also a backstage scenery of performing Flight of the Valkyries, the opera.
Yes,
so you get to see like what opera singers look like in normal clothes, like singing.
Yes. It's really,
street
really
attire,
cool.
Pardon.
Because, and he gets to like go in there and see their practices and stuff. And it's really cool to see somebody who is like that emotionally invested into music that he's heard 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. So
opera singers fascinate me. It's such a totally different style of singing. It's mm-hmm. a totally different usage of your voice and your body as a whole.
Yep. It's interesting to try and see those people who actually like transition back and forth.
That's got to be hard.
Yeah. Did you know that was Jason Derulo?
Really?
He's a trained opera singer.
Wow. I just gained a little more respect for Jason Derulo. Cool.
So he can
sounds
do all
like
the
wiggle, 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 but he's actually an opera singer.
Yeah. If he was on one of the driving in cars like or whatever thing with the host of the late night.
The carpool karaoke.
Carpool karaoke.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
He did
James
one of those
Corden.
With James Corden.
Corden.
Thank you. See, that's why I need you here for pop culture references that I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
So he was in there and he actually asked me, he's like, so you're trained in opera? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, well, can you do some? And he does some and he's spot on. So
you've given me so many interesting things to look up already.
Yay!
And Jason Derulo is actually headlining the Illinois State Fair this year.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to ask him if he can do some opera.
Well, maybe he just will.
Maybe he just will.
Let's jump ahead a couple centuries.
Let's do that. The year, 1954. The place, Hibbing, Minnesota. The man, Robert Allen Zimmerman, age 13. The event, Bar Mitzvah.
Bar Mitzvah.
And according to Moment Magazine, the 400 guests and attendees is the largest bar mitzvah ever in Hibbing, Minnesota.
Mazel tov.
So mazel tov to you, Bob Dylan. I just love the fact that the internet has details of your bar mitzvah.
Right? And details on Hibbing, Minnesota, which does not have very many people.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. I've passed by the town and I blinked and missed it.
All right, Jake.
So thank you for that indulgence. And now let's move on to an actual story. In 1955, police in Bridgeford, California cancel a Fats Domino concert.
Why?
Because they were really scared old white people.
Uh-oh.
In California?
Yes. Yes, the bastion of freedom and liberty. I don't know where I'm going with this.
The
yes.
land of fruits, flakes, and nuts.
Yeah. No, so we've touched on the rock and roll world of rock and roll in the mid-50s and how everyone in the government and authority and all curmudgeons were absolutely scared that the children were going to lose their goddamn minds that they started just canceling random concerts.
What did is I missing something about Fats Domino in particular?
No.
Or is it just people or Magoo?
No.
Yeah, there were some highly publicized riots that kind of happened where crowds collided with police who were trying to keep them from dancing too hard.
Right, but that wasn't directly related to Fats
Domino.
No, it was related
Fats
to rock
Domino
and roll,
has
right?
had a few concerts canceled and a couple riots that happened around him.
Based on him himself or like because of rock and roll? Because I know like when
rock and roll,
that whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, okay.
It's people just go crazy when he's like, I found my thrill.
Yeah, people can't keep their libidos
on Blueberry
Hill.
He just kind of happened to be the big guy who was getting invited to headline a lot of events.
That's funny you say big guy.
All right.
Because
well,
he's fast.
Because he's fast.
And he's
domino.
A big guy.
Because he's fat.
Jake, is Fats Domino still alive?
I don't know. I can't still.
Hey,
I still can't tell the difference between him and Chubby Checker in my head.
Just because they
you
both
want to answer
have
this
names
question?
About being chunky doesn't mean.
I know that. Look, I know that. I legitimately can rationalize that.
They
but the synapses in
are.
My brain that built those memories are still interconnected. They're still there.
I have that
Fats
same
Domino
problem.
Is
maybe
still
it
alive.
Was the infomercials selling the greatest hits of the 1950s that had me confused that they were the same artist. I don't know.
Chubby Checker is dead. Fats
Domino
is alive
okay,
and living
you.
In New Orleans.
All right.
Fats Domino
Look,
is probably
Brian
playing
still can't remember the lyrics to Dark Horse. I don't know the difference between Fats Domino and Chubby Checker, all right? We all have our faults.
What was that Katy Perry song about the horse?
I'm screaming at the... I was screaming
that one's a
at
night
the speakers.
Horse.
It's
night,
Dark Horse. Dark Horse. The
night,
horse is dark.
Night Pony.
Tan Horse.
Just saying.
Night Pony.
Night Pony.
With the guy
forgot
from the rapper with the group in the song.
Hey, sometimes I forget things and I just need like a reminder. If the information isn't directly in my brain, it needs to be triggered in some way.
Just
so.
Think about what it would sound like if Bruce Springsteen sang it.
But even then, like because I'm really bad with songs, like I couldn't sing you like the melody of Dark Horse at all right now.
We all get by with a little help from our friends.
See, but if you do that, I can sing Little Help from My Friends.
I meant it as a cute little idiom, but...
I'm just saying. See, because that one I know. That one's in my head.
Because I could totally
sing... It's ingrained
sing,
into my memory.
I could totally sing Dark Horse.
If you want to play with magic, boy, you should know what you're falling for.
There you go.
Wow.
Just think about it as the boss singing it, and you'll remember.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Because well. I'm going at you like a dark horse.
Yeah.
In a small town.
So wow. Coming at you like a night pony.
You guys.
An evening stallion.
Did you guys like drink during the break here?
We're just getting loopy.
Getting loopy. It's getting later.
Okay, what's next?
All right, 1958, Jerry Lee Lewis arrives at London's Heathrow Airport. I've been to Heathrow Airport. It's a cool place. To start off his British tour. Along with his new bride, 14-year-old cousin Myra.
Yay! I mean, ooh.
Yeah,
he doesn't get the mazel tov on that one.
Although advised not to mention it, Lewis answered all questions about his private life like an idiot. Because so, that's what he did.
Are you telling me that a gentleman who married his bass-playing cousin's daughter an idiot?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Carry on then. Carry on.
The public shock over Lewis's marriage marks the start of a controversy leading to his British tour being canceled after just 3 of the scheduled 37 performances.
Don't be dumb.
Thus, this was another one of those marks against like the early pioneers of rock and roll. Chuck Berry gets arrested. Elvis gets recruited by the army. Jerry Lee Lewis is basically shunned into disappearing. Even Little Richard gives up rock and roll and becomes a preacher. Hmm. Basically, like from that era, like everybody stopped doing it. So it was like there is no real rock and roll being produced in the late 50s. And then all of a sudden in the early 60s is when the next evolution of rock and roll actually comes around with the British invasion.
The only thing I got to point out, though, is that Jerry Lee Lewis married a 14-year-old girl.
13.
A 13-year-old girl.
She was 13 when they got married.
Compared to what all those other people did, like become a preacher.
Now, of course, I mean, you know.
To be fair, he deserved to be shunned.
It's a tragedy to the art, Greg. We're not.
I'm just saying, there's a big difference here between, between choosing a new career. And,
just saying.
And choosing a juvenile.
No. But that I'm just saying, like, there are, during that era, this was just another one of those things that people then also used to say, well, obviously rock and roll is bad.
Yeah, corrupt. Yeah, morally corrupt.
It was a scapegoat.
And a lot of the early black artists as well were caught up on the exact same charges that Chuck Berry was. So they just used that law to... like, just knock people out of the spotlight and put them in prison for a couple of years. So.
Well, they did not win because rock and roll is alive today.
Yeah,
because
once, you know, once that bell was rung, it can't be unrung. So rock and roll continues on because people were able to purchase it and actually listen to it and therefore evolve it into something else.
A scientific study.
And then white people stole the black man's music. And
A scientific study was released and it was confirmed that rock and roll is not noise pollution.
Ah.
Yeah, that was a very, very scholarly study that they did.
Good to know.
Well, I can honestly tell you if it's not noise or not.
If it's noise pollution.
Yeah, I mean I guess if it was loud enough, it would be noise pollution.
And then you put a bagpipe in the song.
Yeah, that'd be even worse.
About it not being noise pollution.
I think the bagpipe.
But actually, you know what? One of the things that I learned in school was actually the definition of music, and the definition of music is organized noise.
Hmm. That's kind of beautiful.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I always thought that if I was ever going to start like some type of percussion group or something, I'd call it organized noise.
So, he'd be bigger than the Blue Man Group.
I highly doubt that, but still. Go for at least like a stomp level, you know,
it's
maybe.
It's a much easier stick to pull off than painting yourself blue.
Sweep,
it is.
Sweep, sweep, stomp. Sweep, yes, sweep, yes. Stomp.
Can't, tap to tap.
I love Stomp, actually. I've seen them in...
Love Stomp, too.
I've seen them here, and I've got like their DVDs and stuff that they released. Pulse, A Stomp Odyssey is my favorite, though. That one, if you haven't seen it, it's amazing.
I have the episode they did on Sesame Street with Oscar's trash can and all the sweep. They were going down the street and sweeping the trash, and Oscar was getting cross with them because he wanted the trash, so they banged on his trash can and picked him up and used him as an instrument and took him away.
Nice. Well, Pulse, A Stomp Odyssey was actually released in Omnimax theaters.
Oh, that would have been incredible.
And so I saw it here at the Science Center when it came out because it was all percussion stuff, and my dad and I went, and it was just beautiful. It was great because it's all these different cultures in their percussion. So it wasn't just the stomp people. The stomp people were like there sort of in between everything and then going from that.
But... Stomp, the Jerry Lee Lewis story.
Good Lord.
That segue was beautiful.
They already did a Jerry Lee Lewis movie. It starred Dennis Quaid, mm-hmm. right?
Of course.
As Jerry Lee Lewis. And he was almost spot on, except for the fact that he was far better looking than Jerry Lee Lewis ever could possibly be. But it was called Great Balls of Fire.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that didn't stop Jerry Lee Lewis's career. He still kept going on and sort of mildly got famous again, you know, for doing all the old music. But yeah, that whole marrying his 13-year-old cousin was pretty devastating to his career.
Happened to Woody Allen too, but he came back.
Yeah, but he married like his adopted daughter. It's like, but at least she was of age when it happened too. So
no, she was. I thought she was underage.
No, it was believed that she was underage, like when they possibly started their relationship.
I see,
but there's no evidence to state that.
It's just that since it was his daughter,
yes.
That kind of overshadowed a lot of things.
Yes.
Gross.
Well, not to give him any credibility, but it was his adopted daughter, so
yes.
It's not like it was his blood relative. Not
yeah,
that makes it any better. I'm not giving him any pass on that. I'm just, for those that don't know.
Yeah, there are, it is a grading scale here, and that's a little bit lesser than what it could have been.
It's still an immense fail.
It's still bad, but yes. All right, let's move on. 1980, U2 kicked off their 23-date 11 o'clock TikTok tour at the Hope and Anchor in London.
Excellent.
That's all I got. That's just a quick one that I wanted to throw in there because I thought it was fascinating.
You too.
Absolutely fascinating, but let's skip it.
Moving on to 1993, Swedish group Ace of Base started a three-week run at number one on the UK singles charts with All That She Wants. It was a number two hit in the U.S.
Boo, boo, ba-da-doo-doo.
I have a funny story about that song. My best friend was supposed to, we were in church camp or the youth group one morning and we were little and they wanted us to take a popular song and that was the number one song at the time and they wanted our groups to turn the song into a song that related
oh my God,
we
had to do that too. Do you remember that one, Jake? We had to do that once. We had to take a song.
Either selective memory or I thoroughly did not participate.
I guarantee you my song is worse than this, but go ahead.
I just made one up.
My best friend, she picked the song All That She Wants, and she got up in front of the whole thing. All that Mary wants is her little baby named Jesus. And with the whole thing.
All that she wants is another Bible for her birthday.
All right, I'm going to embarrass myself royally at this point. So we had to do something similar in school, and I remember this. I don't remember what anybody else did. But I remember other people picking like normal songs that they could very easily convert. So I took the song Let's Talk About Sex and just replaced the word sex with God.
Let's talk about God, baby.
Let's talk about God and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that God brings. I don't know why I did that.
Because it was easy and you're lazy.
I do recall doing it last minute, but I mean, this was honestly like first grade or something, like when this happened.
It's, yeah, it was like
which is why Jake doesn't remember
it.
So
the best thing about your story, Brian, is that you literally did exactly what Cartman does with Faith Plus One. Literally.
Yep. 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 I know. I'm utterly embarrassed by that story. It is not the epitome of my songwriting abilities, although I was writing songs at that age, so.
Clearly.
I was. I had sheets of paper that my dad actually bought for me, and I just started writing down lyrics and stuff. They're stupid songs written by, you know, like a 5 and 6 year old at the time, but still, I was writing music back then. Even so, I still love writing music to this day.
I used to write songs about like girlfriends that I hadn't ever had yet.
Yeah, I never did them
because I was like 13. So I was like, someday I'm gonna get a girlfriend, and this song would be the song that I write for my girlfriend.
Wow.
Sorry, that's like
all the, my stuff was like introspective, you know?
This is gonna be in my back pocket for when I finally get a girlfriend.
Quite literally the most optimistic song ever written in adolescence.
What else did you expect from Greg?
I know. Oh, it's so Boy Scout, I love it. But in 2009,
I want to read the songs.
The cutest scene happened in Jack White's backyard when Meg White married the son of Patti Smith, Jack Smith, in a double wedding. Also married the Raconteurs bassist Jack Lawrence to his wife, photographer Joe McHagherty.
Cool. That's cool.
I beg your pardon?
Well, McHagherty. McHagherty.
McHagherty.
Wow. You guys.
Maccabees? McLackabee.
Sorry, I'm not Catholic. Only my Catholic friends will get that joke.
Double wedding's cool, though.
That's pretty cool. I say, though, let's move on to May 23rd.
Got something cooler?
Oh, yes, I do, actually. 1934, born on this day, Robert Moog.
Oh! Ooh. You sure it's not... Moog.
Moog.
Of course, the inventor of the synthesizer. He built his first electronic instrument, a theremin, at the age of 14. And he made the Mini Moog, the first compact, easy-to-use synthesizer in 1970.
Did you say he invented the theremin at 14?
No. He built a theremin. And then at age, he built his first instrument, a theremin, at the age of 14. And... then made the Mini Moog.
How at 14?
A nerdy thing to do.
Yeah, do you have the wherewithal to be able to build a theremin?
Well, I mean, it's an aerial and a little bit of soldering and another aerial.
But okay,
you're
okay,
not 14.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. All right,
whatever happened.
Sorry. Okay, wait. Okay, I didn't complete the sentence.
Oh.
So the first said he made the Mini Moog, the first compact, easy to use synthesizer in 1970. So, but he was born in 1934. So, he died August 21st, 2005 in North Carolina. He was 71 and, he died of brain cancer. We had a lot of brain cancer deaths recently, just cancer deaths recently. It's been pretty crazy with musicians. So. Hmm.
I was building instruments at 14. They were rubber bands over Kleenex boxes.
It's easy to build drums. You just pull out random things and hit them. So
yeah, I would
bucket drumming.
I would make popcorn tins and turn them into drums and pots and pans, and the snare drum would be like a skillet.
It's a little crafting into my.
I honestly didn't start to try playing an instrument until I was like 13. So, but I was singing all throughout my childhood. That was my first love, was actually singing. So
I scratched my first record when I was 5, and my mom got real mad.
And that's when the seed of your name as a DJ started.
Don't scratch those records.
She did. She pulled like a full thing. Like, you're gonna scratch the record. That's gonna get broken. You're gonna compromise the integrity of my records. Like, but listen to this.
Warner Brothers Movies presents. The story of a woman whose lifelong goal to be a DJ started at a tender young age.
Stop scratching those records!
It was my Fisher-Price record player, but it was her record, so she was mad.
Don't tell me what to do, Mom. You'll never control me.
Warner Brothers presents DJ Lady Scratch.
Quit scratching those records!
I do what I want!
Coming this fall. Oh, my God. That was actually a lot of fun. I like that voice. Thanks for playing along with me, guys.
Your mom actually made a cameo for that just now.
Yep. Thanks.
See you around.
Okay. See you. Bye, Mom. Love you.
Moving on up. 1966.
The Doors play their first show at the Whiskey A Go Go and go on to become the house band for the Whiskey A Go Go,
which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's another good one.
Not the best house band.
One of the best house bands.
But one of the best house bands.
Not the best house band.
Oh, I know where this is going.
Nope. I'm not going there now because you said that.
Okay. What's next?
I'll go there.
1969. The Who released Tommy.
Woo!
A movie. It accompanies it 6 years later.
Yeah. It's a good album.
It's a good album, but I still, like, for me, the movie, like, did nothing for me. The only thing I got from the movie was Elton John playing Pinball Wizard, and that was amazing.
Super cool. I don't understand why all the so many bands made movies to accompany their. I mean, I get where the artistic format would, mm-hmm. you know, where you're coming from with that, you know, the whole Pink Floyd The Wall, and, you know,
it's kind of like
how it comes along.
I think after A Hard Day's Night, it was, for a while, it was just kind of easy to get investors to jump onto that bandwagon.
I mean, even before that, though, I mean, with Elvis making a bunch of movies, it's just that they were like, well, if we can do this with one guy, we can do this with a band.
Well, but with Elvis, it was more like, you know, girls think he's hot and we'll use him in a film. But in these other senses, it was, you know, like, I don't know, I feel like it was more of a, let's integrate us as a band and the soundtrack into, mm-hmm. you know, make it one big giant art piece, as opposed to let's bring famous Elvis into this Beach Bunny movie.
Which was kind of like, yeah, that's true. But I mean, they did like write songs specifically for like those movies and stuff.
Sure.
So that's how Follow That Dream got made.
I mean, it all comes down to pop culture, really. You know, I mean, times have changed, you know, but I mean, we have movies like Guardians of the Galaxy where they're talking about, oh, the music and this and that. But back then, you know, we didn't have as much of a diverse range of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, pop culture, they just capitalize on it. Why not?
If you'll eat it, we'll feed it to you.
Yeah, who's hot?
Mm-hmm.
Let's make all the money we can.
Mm-hmm.
And say what you want about Tommy not getting it. It's more comprehensible than the Monkey's Head. And it's,
wow.
Which I love. I really love Head. But it doesn't... Isolate that audio.
I'm going to record that, and I'm going to play it back for you whenever I want.
I'm Jacob Krim.
That's on the chaos really pad.
We're just going to superimpose that phrase every time
you
he
know
introduces
what?
You.
Yeah, yeah. Screw
Welcome
you. That,
to follow
that's,
the sound.
That's what I sign off with now every show.
Go
with
ahead.
Me, as always, is Jacob Krim, you know, and I really love Head.
The movie.
And it's, you know what? And Tommy is not nearly like the worst band movie
no,
ever
no,
made.
No,
it's not.
No.
Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park.
You get
no.
out.
Yeah.
No, it's indefensible, and you know it.
Kiss saves Christmas.
Yeah, Kiss meets
Kiss
the Phantom.
Kiss saves Christmas.
No, but I mean, like there were a ton of other movies that I've actually never seen. Apparently, the mm-hmm. Dave Clark 5 made a movie. I've never seen it. but then I started thinking about it. So what would be the most recent band or group or whatever that has actually made a movie that legitimately starred them as a band?
There was the Bob Dylan one where Dylan plays Bob Dylan and not Bob Dylan.
I think of like Flight of the Conchords or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not a movie.
D
that's
types, you know, you
or Tenacious D.
Tenacious D,
yeah.
I guess might fall into that. But that's
Blues Brothers.
Blues
Brothers that doesn't really count.
Well, they were a fictitious group before
I'm
then,
thinking,
and they had a review and a tour.
Yeah, but I'm thinking like my mind popped back to like Spice World.
Oh yeah, oh, Spice World.
You know, because that's like it's a pop group.
Yeah, that's a good
that
point.
Then
good
all
one.
Of a sudden there was a movie that was made specifically for this pop group just to be this pop group in a movie.
Like very Josie and the Pussycats.
Like Britney Spears' Crossroads.
Crossroads was a beautiful masterpiece.
Crossroads starring Ralph Macchio was a beautiful masterpiece. Crossroads starring Britney Spears and Anson Mount is not.
I got a movie for you, AC/DC.
Although it's
live.
Although it's funny that you brought up Guardians of the Galaxy because the one girl in Guardians of the Galaxy is in Crossroads with Britney Spears. So,
well,
Zoe Saldana.
It just shows the movie didn't ruin her.
No, that's no, great. Of course not. But I was always a fan of hers going back to when I first saw her in the movie Center Stage.
You know who else was in Crossroads? Pennsylvania.
Yes, that is true.
from Orange is the New Black?
The only reason why I actually watched it was because my wife wanted to watch it, because Anson Mount is in the movie. And of course, Anson Mount then later on became famous for his role in Hell on Wheels, of where he plays an awesome dude. And so she was like, well, that's Anson Mount, you know, it's like, and she's all like into that. And then she was like, okay, let's watch this crappy, crappy movie, which he was actually like suckered into doing by, Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro starred with him in a previous film.
Oh,
and he told him, he was like, hey, I'm going up for this role in a Britney Spears movie. And Robert De Niro was like, you should totally do this movie.
Robert De Niro owes him a favor.
It's a little bit off, but I did think that Billy Joe Armstrong just had, what was it, Ordinary People or Ordinary World was the movie?
That I don't know.
That it was him as kind of like a character of himself.
Yeah.
You know, with your bringing up that, I guess nowadays, we're making musicals based on discographies. You know, there's American Idiot, the Billy Joel, I can't remember what it's called at the top of my head.
Moving out,
exactly. You know, you had Mamma Mia. So instead of putting that on film now, we're turning it into traveling shows.
They did it for, they did a Burt Bacharach one too.
Did they?
Promises.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think maybe we've just transitioned into, you know, it's not something we can put in as a feature film, but people still really enjoy it. And so let's turn it into a musical.
They'll show it in theaters. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is true. But it would be kind of interesting if, like, you know, One Direction had decided to make a movie, because I think that would have been...
They did.
Oh, did they?
They did.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Because that couldn't have been a wide release.
It was in theaters, but it wasn't like, you know, Monkeys Style, where it was like...
See, I'm thinking like Hard Day's Night, kind of like level of them doing a movie, and it's just, that didn't happen, so...
It was more of a... I want to say it was more documentary style, but it was a pandering film.
I remember a couple of the guys from NSYNC did a movie, but it was just like two of them as opposed to the group.
Lance Bass was the star of On the Line.
Yes.
And Joey Fatone was also in that movie. Joey Fatone was also in My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Yes, that is true. He played the brother or cousin. I forgot.
Whatever. Nikki.
Nikki, yeah.
Nikki, and this is Nikki, and this is Nicole, and this is...
I think Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny was the last one.
Yeah.
And before that, it was Spice World.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, I wouldn't count like any of the Justin Bieber movie, because that was like a tour documentary kind of thing.
Well, and that's similar to the One Direction
one. And then the same, Katy Perry did the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, I mean, like a legitimate... ABBA, the movie, was the same. It was just a concert.
But like a legitimate movie that was made specifically for that artist or band or whatever to do that.
For their platform. Yeah, for that platform.
Oh, I'm sure Ed Sheeran has one coming.
Oh, I doubt that. It would be. He has tried to branch off a little bit into acting.
Ed Sheeran's Shape of You. Coming soon.
All right, moving on up to 1970, Paul McCartney's debut solo album, McCartney, started a 3-week run at number one on the U.S. album charts. Apart from Linda McCartney vocal contributions, McCartney performed and recorded the entire album solo. The album featured Maybe I'm Amazed, which Rod Stewart and The Faces featured on their 1971 album Long Playa.
What a show off.
Yeah.
So they're featured on his album.
I love albums, though, that are like, or artists that just record everything themselves. That, I mean, you look at what Dave Grohl did, mm-hmm. you know, with Foo Fighters originally, like where he just recorded a ton of that. And then, of course, one of my all-time favorite artists, The Rocket Summer, he records everything on every album. You know, it's like, I really love people who can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would much prefer... you know, the band or the artist performing the entire album than to have a studio band come in and then hear it later.
Yeah, exactly.
With different musicians.
Exactly. And let's see, moving on up to 1973, Jefferson Airplane were prevented from giving a free concert in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco when the authorities passed a resolution banning electronic instruments.
No loud noises.
The group later wrote the song... We built this city after that happened.
But they were Jefferson Airplane then. Were they Jefferson Starship or were they just Starship?
Well, they were Starship when they
did We Built the City?
When they released We Built This City.
But it was about them.
But it was about that banned. That right. thing happened, and when they were banned from playing in San Francisco.
How dare you not let
in
us
In 73, actually.
Song.
That's the funny part.
When did We Built the City come out?
82, I think, actually. I think it came out in 82.
I read Grace Slick's autobiography, and it was fascinating.
Really?
It was so much more fascinating than I anticipated.
1985.
Oh, 85.
Oh, I was right.
So. 85. Yeah. So 73 to 85, that is 13 years in the making.
Yeah.
That bun was not in the oven nearly long enough.
We wrote this song for 13
oh
years.
Oh, my God.
We wrote this song. We wrote this song for 13 years.
The bad part is that actually from that album, that's not the song that I find most annoying. The song I find most annoying is Sarah.
I knew you were going to say Sarah because I was saying the same thing in my brain and I waved it right over to you.
And there's one particular reason why, and I'm fairly certain my cousin won't remember any of this, but my cousin Sarah was up here like visiting or something, and my dad like recorded it for her from the CD to a tape so she could have it. And so I had to like listen to it a couple of times over, and I was like, oh my goodness, no.
I heard that song once and it ruined my day.
So. Pretty sure everybody named Sarah doesn't like that song either.
Sarah.
There's nothing worse than having a song with your name. I have a friend named Treasure, so when the Bruno Mars song came out, like she was already like, my mom named me Treasure, and then the Bruno Mars song came out, so everybody walk around all the time like, Treasure! And she's like, yeah, I know.
That is who you are.
I get it, guys.
So, so for my mom, it was Sherry.
Right? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sherry, baby.
Fun fact, my name was supposed to be Rhiannon, but my mom misheard the song, so I dodged a bullet on that.
Thank God.
Turned into Brianna because my mom, a little deaf, one ear, maybe. I don't know. But dodge that bullet.
Tell you who else is a little deaf in one ear. Double birthday, 1938.
Woo.
Tommy Chong, born in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So practically American.
That is true.
Tommy Chong is Canadian?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah, man.
That's really funny. Especially since he sings Born in East L.A.
Yeah, well, it was just lyrics. It wasn't true.
Clearly. My eyes have been open to this sham.
He was born there, but he wasn't raised there.
I'm just kidding.
He's moved around a lot.
Yeah, but he lived in Southern California for like a long time. But he didn't meet...
Well, Cheech...
He met Cheech, though, in Canada.
Yeah, and Cheech is the one who sang Born in East L.A.
Yeah,
so
and
I'll give him some slack there.
So, but they're the combination of those two guys like has just made some comedy gold. And they've always loved music and rock and roll, and Tommy Chong has always been a very big like advocate of keeping the music alive.
Yeah, yeah. So. Hmm.
Thank you, immigrants.
Funny story about
Good
Tommy
job,
Chong.
Tommy.
So funny story about Tommy Chong. After he got out of prison,
for selling drug paraphernalia.
Yes, for drug paraphernalia.
It's
oh,
for
God.
Tobacco.
He spent like 2 or 3 years, and then he and Cheech got together, and then they did a tour, and then he did a solo tour on his own. Anyway, he was in St. Louis. My brother, who's a police officer, has his partner with him, who's a gigantic Tommy Chong fan. So he finds out that Tommy Chong's going to be at, I think he was at the Duck Room, actually. And so he runs his partner home to go get like 3 CDs for Tommy Chong to sign. And they wait for him to finish the show, go up to him after the show in uniform. And Tommy Chong is walking out of the Duck Room with an acoustic guitar in his hand and that just a shirt on his back. And he walks up, he goes, oh, sets down his guitar. He goes, it's just a guitar in there, guys. It's just a guitar, nothing else. And then.
Definitely don't look, though.
Right. And then partner number one pulls out his albums. He goes, I just want your autograph. He said, oh, man, I never sign autographs for cops. And signed all 3 of them and wrote a pretty kind of cutesy little message on it. You
That's
know?
Adorable.
That's great.
And a good impression.
I was going to say, well done, sir.
Yeah.
I like him more now.
For cops.
Both Jacob and Tommy.
Yeah, it's a great story. But also in 1938, slightly more influential gentleman, Prince Buster, born in Jamaica.
Boom.
Mr. Scott himself, the man behind madness, the man behind everything. Without him, we wouldn't have an entire genre, more than likely.
Basically.
You probably know him from going, One Step Beyond, and being the producer, lead singer, and the major contributing songwriter in Madness. Yeah, there you go.
I was taken aback by that's... I was like, are we really that early in the show still?
Yes.
Prince Buster? Ooh, we might need to speed this up a little.
Yeah, we're already like 40 minutes into this. So.
Oh, geez. Well, there you go.
We're on the second day. All right, let's run through a couple of birthdays then. 1941, we also have the quite famous, and we've talked about him now numerous times, Robert Zimmerman, a.k.a. Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Oh, Bob.
So there you go. Of course... Everybody knows his career. He played with everybody. He's done everything. He's won every award. And
he was in a band.
You can tease him for being a marble mouth, but you can't deny his influence.
Yep, yep, yep.
He's from Minnesota.
Moving on up to 1944, we also have born on this day, Patti LaBelle.
Oh.
The great Patti LaBelle.
She's great.
She's amazing.
She's so great. I love her.
Yes, yes. And let's see, moving on up then to 1945, born on this day, Priscilla Presley.
The lovely Priscilla Presley.
The lovely Priscilla Presley, who met Elvis at a very young age, but of course waited till she was of age to marry him, unlike Jerry Lee Lewis.
Like what you're supposed to do.
But it's pretty much rumored that, she was living with Elvis before she was of age. And
like a running theme of gross dude stuff on this episode.
Honestly, it was a Southern thing, too.
Well, I think back then they were constantly pushing you to get married, you know?
That's true.
So. And that was, I mean, back then a generation before that, it was not unheard of for 13-year-old girls to get married.
But
honestly,
it's so
it wasn't
gross.
I mean, it's like, and then they changed the law. It's like, because it used to be, I mean, it used to actually be even lower than 13. And then they changed the law. And then there were a couple of states that still held on to like the age was like 15.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's 17 pretty much like everywhere for the most part. And then a couple of places it's like 18 or so.
I thought you had to be 18.
Iowa is still 16. I know Illinois, I believe,
Arkansas
17.
Is still 16. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's some places it's 17, some places it's 18.
The whole, like, age of consent, like, social construct is, like, basically an invention of the 20th century.
Yeah. It honestly is.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, we had people getting married who were, you know, 13 and 12, you know, so it's like,
it's funny though, even then, so that it's also state by state, like you said,
well, yeah.
You know,
like, why do you not have to be an adult to get married? I don't understand.
Well, the concept of adulthood is like teenagers didn't exist as a concept until the 20s.
Yeah.
Right. But like, if
like,
you
there's
have to
Time
be
Magazine articles going, what's going on with these teenagers? They call them teenagers. They ride motorcycles.
It's just you had to be 18 to join the military. You had to be 21 to buy alcohol, but you can write, you know, you can marry somebody.
Even that didn't actually happen. That was a complete change in the system well after the fact. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, before kids used to be able to drink whenever they wanted to.
Well, but even today, like we were saying, there's some states that you only have to be 16 to get married, but you have to be 18 to get to join the military or get your driver's license even in some states.
Vote. Or, yeah.
You know, like you can get married, but you can't drive a car.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty insane, just like how it's all kind of, I don't know why we veered off.
I'm getting off topic. What's
next?
We really got off topic with that one.
We got another birthday.
Those rocks.
Let's go for it. What
1947.
We got?
Brian, you know who Cynthia Albertine of Chicago, Illinois is?
I'm so excited.
I have no idea.
You might know her slightly better by the name Plastercaster, a duo of groupies who... In the 60s.
Do you want me to?
Did some.
You know what? Yeah. I can tell you.
Just, go ahead.
You just have this like look on your face like I'm not sure how I'm going to word this.
Because I'm not.
They did some plaster casting.
Well, what what she would do was she would bring a giant container of cylinder.
True artist that she is.
A container, fill it with plaster, and then choose a particular appendage of a popular band member.
Male.
Insert the appendage into the cylindrical plaster container and make a plaster cast of that appendage. And she did it for hundreds. And she even moved on to doing it for women as well. She would take assets of women and plaster cast those as well, not in a cylindrical.
I believe her website, the current running number right now is like 72.
No, it's more. Yeah. It's got to be more than that.
72. She's pretty choosy. She's really choosy.
I thought she was in the hundreds.
Really choosy.
Wow. Well, I guess she can be.
I know that Jimi Hendrix is in the collection.
Yes.
Peter Frampton.
I read an interview that Peter Frampton is in the collection, and he also has a record in the collection for being the smallest part of the collection.
Poor Peter Frampton. Which she has all of the Dolly Rods, but she only...
yeah, all the Dolly Rods.
But she has less than 100. I thought she had way more than that.
She was also commemorated by Kiss in a song called Plaster Caster.
Mm-hmm. Mm. One of the most famous groupie duos of all time. Cynthia would hold the container to make sure that... You know, her partner would hold the container to make sure it stayed non-moving, and Cynthia would hold the subject, make sure it stayed non-moving and in the correct position, and ta-da! And then she would present it to them and say, congratulations, I have made you a statue.
Wow.
There was a Rolling Stone article, or an entire issue, that was the groupie issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they were featured pretty heavily. I think there was like a 3 or 4 page article on the plaster casters.
Yeah, I did, because I don't know if it was the same article or not, but I remember reading one that one tradition she used to have after getting a plaster cast of somebody was then she would send them a Christmas card every year. And and reading about the drama of these rock stars who their wives would go grab the mail and there'd be a Christmas card, and it would basically just be a postcard of her totally naked, and it would, and on the other side it would be like, hey, Merry Christmas from your old friend.
Like your old friend, huh? What who's this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you'll never believe what I did with this one.
Okay.
So that's who the plaster caster is.
Interesting.
You're not Googling it, are you?
No.
Oh, you should. Her website is amazing.
Not safe for work.
Her website's amazing to watch.
Of course, Jake did.
I looked at it. Shouldn't have looked at it.
You probably shouldn't do that there, buddy.
Look, let's freeze over that.
What? I'm not judging Jake. I'm just...
Okay. What else we got here?
It's only awkward if you make it awkward.
Right, you know? Look, it's art.
Can we do a review on this collection?
Don't make eye contact.
Can we do an art gallery review of the plaster caster's work?
Wow. If you guys want to do that, by all means, do so.
I don't think we'd be the first.
We'd be on a different show.
There are posting rules for the group, though. So, you know, you may have to blur out some stuff. That's all I'm saying. How about we move on to 1956 while you guys stare at random plaster castings of
appendages.
How long can we male celebrities?
There are drawings of plastic.
Are there any artist interpretations of, like, somebody was inspired by that and then went on to create their own art?
Oh, I don't know, but that would be a great documentary.
Ton of appendage art out there.
I'm sure there's somebody who made a documentary. Moving on to 1956, to a lot more of a wholesome topic. The first Eurovision Songfest was held in Lugano, Switzerland. The event was the brainchild of Marcel Besançon, I don't know how to say that name, of the European Broadcasting Union. 7 countries participated, and they were each allowed 2 songs. Both Luxembourg and the winner Switzerland used the same singer for both, since that was allowed. Switzerland won with Refrain by Liz Asiar.
Don't know that one.
Yeah, I don't know that one either. I'm guessing on that's how you pronounce it too. So.
Beautiful country though.
Beautiful plumage. No, I don't know why that popped into my head. 1969, BBC Television aired the first 33 1/3 revolutions per monkey.
Per monkey?
Per monkey.
That's multiplication I have to do there, times 4.
You need to do a little monkey review?
Guest on the, and I've seen this as well, it's a fascinating thing, but guests on that show included Fats Domino, who is still alive, Jerry Lee Lewis, who is still very much dead, Little Richard and Julie Driscoll. Actually, it was really cool because they did was they had a bunch of pianos and they just had them stacked on top of it. And so then each person was then standing on top of the thing playing the piano. It's actually really cool if you get a chance to check it out. Huh. I'm sure you can find a picture of it or something. And moving on, 1975, Earth, Wind, and Fire went number one on the U.S. singles chart with Shining Star, the group's first and only U.S. number one.
Really?
You're Shining Star.
Well, September never got all I
no
get.
Matter who you are.
It just surprised me.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it probably made it up into the top 10, but maybe not hitting the number one.
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
And, Jake, what you got?
1979, Genesis play an intimate concert. Strange choice of words after 1947, but hey, at the Roxy in L.A., announced the show, 500 tickets are available, and the attendees are surprised when they go to buy their tickets because Genesis is in the ticket booth selling their own tickets.
Oh my gosh, I would pee.
That is cool.
People lined up a day ahead of time, 24 hours exactly. And to buy their tickets, and
can
suddenly,
you imagine
Phil Collins just in there, like just stamping tickets.
Yeah,
I don't care anymore.
Taking cash.
Just take the ticket.
Mike just standing there at the window, like, how many? Like, wait.
Yeah.
Hello, how many tickets for our show?
That's funny.
This goes directly in our pockets.
here's a tune for you. Get in the back of the line with everyone else.
All right, let's close out this day, though. May 24th, 1997, Hanson starts a 3-week run at number one on the U.S. singles charts with Mmm-bop, da-da-doo-wop, da-da-doo-wop. I've actually seen Hanson, recently, in the last couple of years. They do put on a good show now.
I think they're so underrated, and theirs have a huge cult following still to this day.
I honestly think that they got a bad rap after the whole Mbop thing. Like with that first album they had, they big huge hit, massive success, go on tour, sell out, blah 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 blah. Label tells them, hey, go on, make another album, it'll be cool. So they submitted songs. And the label rejected all of them.
Mm-hmm.
They recorded more. Label rejected all of them. They recorded more. Label rejected all of them.
They submitted
40 plus songs to the label, and they were denied all of them.
And they're such a talented group of young men. They really are. I've been seeing them too, and I was blown away because I took my best friend because it was her favorite band. So for her birthday, we went and saw them, and I was really impressed because I didn't realize I was thinking, the Mbop band, But they're very, very talented. And like I said, they're fansons. They're big fan base. They still have a huge cult following, all
very
things considered.
Much so, yes.
I think their worst mistake they could have made was getting older.
Yeah.
And how dare they?
Especially Zach, having kids and stuff. How dare you?
If they had just not gotten older, they would have done fine. I don't know why some people choose the paths they do, but...
I think they all have, I think Taylor, the middle one, he has something like 6 or 7 kids.
Oh, yeah. He had a lot of kids.
Yeah.
They all seem to have a few kids, at least. I know that much.
Is he one of those whack jobs that is into home births? And
I think possibly. I thought they were like Latter-day Saints or...
They're all Scientologists.
No, they weren't. I don't think they were Latter-day Saints, but they were
not Latter-day Saints, but Mormon.
They were in a sect of Christianity that was very much you got to have a bunch of kids. I think it was they're a part of the Quiverful.
Quiverful movement.
Okay. So, which is basically, you've got to have a ton of kids. That's what you do.
I know a guy, I got a friend. He's never told me. He's like, part of a movement. But he's got 8 kids and 7 of them he delivered himself. And I told him he was insane. Every single time. Yeah. His wife is tiny, too. She's like 4'9".
Oh.
Like, you poor little woman. Poor little woman, your hips. Oh, God bless you. Anyway.
And 7 home births.
7 of them are home births, yeah.
My gosh.
Surprisingly, though, Hanson is now going on their Middle of Everywhere 25th anniversary tour this year.
I'm really glad they took that opportunity and went with it.
And they are coming to St. Louis October 11th, 2017. It's a Wednesday. And
the middle of the week.
They're going to be playing at the pageant. Doors open at 7.
And their entire roadie crew is their children.
And they're only selling tickets in the center.
All ages show. Looking pretty cool here. So nice black and white photo going for that. So there you go. If you're in St. Louis, go to the pageant. Go for the October 11th show for Hanson. Good stuff. I'm pretty sure my wife is going. She's already planned for that one. Not that she's like a super Hanson fan. She just wants to go see him again because she can.
This is my impression of me at a Hanson show. Play Umbop!
All right. Moving on to May 25th.
Are you going to play it? Sorry. Go ahead.
1969. A great convergence in history. The Who and Led Zeppelin appeared at the Meriwether Post Pavilion in Columbia, Maryland. This was the only time the two groups ever appeared together, with Zeppelin opening the show.
Wow. I wonder how that discussion went. Well, which one of you is playing first? Who's
the
opening?
The other funny thing, though, is that on the tickets, their name was misspelled. So Led Zeppelin was actually spelled L-E-A-D.
Ouch.
Poor guys.
And then Who is spelled H-O-O?
No, but yeah, it's just funny because this was like really before, you know, Zeppelin like took off and everything. So it would have been like, you know, the Who playing there. It's like that would have been a fascinating show.
Mm-hmm.
So I have heard, though, that the Who playing back then was kind of hit or miss sometimes. So it's like it just kind of depended on how messed up they were at the time. And then, of course, I've also heard later on that it was the exact same thing with Zeppelin. It was basically like, how messed up are they right now, you know, to put on a good show or not. And I've heard people who said when they came to St. Louis and played different places, it was like, it's the worst show I've ever been to. They're like, but I wouldn't trade it because it's Led Zeppelin.
It's like a feather in your cap.
I'd like to just point out one quick tangent, if I will, though. Just the fact that around the United States, depending on what city you live in, is what band you get that night along those lines. Because I say this only because, well, Bree's family, I believe, are going to be seeing Modest Mouse in St. Louis soon.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Modest Mouse in Detroit. Somebody gave them the heads up that Detroit was a blow-off show. You know, that was the show, like, oh, you're doing however many dates. The Detroit one, you can just get as messed up as you want. Nobody likes Detroit. Well, that was the show I was at, and it was the worst concert I'd ever been to because the band was wasted. But they did another 20 dates, and I'm sure, and everybody's like, oh, they were so great and this and that. I was like, well, they didn't give a damn about Detroit, you know. So maybe they just didn't like the town they were in.
So here's the funny thing, and I'm sure if anybody outside of the area actually listens to this, St. Louis has a reputation of like the people that come to see concerts here.
Mm-hmm.
And that reputation is that if you honestly do not bring your A game to a St. Louis show, the crowd will not react to you. They'll be respectful, but they'll just sit there and, you know, stare at you while you play.
We don't like spending our hard-earned money on you half-assing it.
So a lot of people, you know, will give sort of this St. Louis thing of like, oh, well, they're dead crowds, you know, that kind of thing. But for the most part, that's part of it because they're not being that expressive anyway. But at the same time, I've seen some people come through town and get legitimately pissed off at St. Louis audiences, despite the fact that, you know, they think that they're up there doing like this really great show. And the St. Louis crowd is just like, no, you suck. It's like, we're here for the people that we actually want to see. So It's pretty brutal. But St. Louis is a tough crowd. It honestly is.
Like, according to the bag I got at Trader Joe's, we're the live music entertainment capital of the world, so maybe we have high expectations.
I don't know how that seems remotely possible.
I don't either, but I like the bag because it's free.
The other side says...
Sounds like Trader Joe's is lying.
The other side says St. Louis, Missouri, and underneath that it says Do-Si-Do.
And then it says, where did you go to high school?
Yeah.
It's probably the only St. Louis thing on the bag other than the gooey butter cake recipe on the bottom.
And then it's the Nashville skyline.
Weird. But there's a random arch in the back, but it's like boots and like cowboy boots and
I do always love St. Louis depictions in media, like in movies or
you can
in television
tell
shows.
They don't know
because it's yeah. like you guys didn't even like try to find a photo of St. Louis to match this to.
It's funny. I just watched a show the other day and I thought that exact same thing.
It wasn't Superstore?
No, Supernatural.
Supernatural. Okay. Because they did it in Superstore. Superstore actually takes place in St. Louis.
Okay.
And they finally showed like where the store is in relation to downtown. And when I saw it, I was like, I paused it for a second, and Jessica was like, what? I said, they've got this completely messed up. And she's like, what do you mean? I go, if they're in this position and St. Louis is off in the distance there, this means that they're dead center in North St. Louis.
Oh.
Which they wouldn't be.
Highly unlikely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, the skyline wasn't right either. So it was like, they've got the arch. And then like over here on the side is all of these other buildings. Mm. It's like, it's no, that's not how it looks.
Generic yeah. skyline, and they photoshopped yeah. the arch over.
Well, because
there's the arch.
I remember in Supernatural, the one was like, he broke into like this really nice mansion. And you know, committed a murder or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just this really big, nice, elaborate home and like a subdivision. And the woman was like, well, we do get some crime around here. We're not that far from downtown. And I was like, where? Anywhere downtown, is there a nice
residential
like, built in like 2005 mansion? You know?
Yeah.
I was like, it's not
we
historically.
We only got old mansions here
yeah,
in St. Louis.
Well, yeah. It's all historic. Like, there's mm-hmm. not like a brand new.
Keep your newfangled houses.
Suburban neighborhood, like downtown St. Louis. No. And then they have that show Defiance.
Yeah.
Which is supposed to be like post St. Louis as well.
Yeah, but that one, like, it's completely.
Apocalyptic.
Like, the entire landscape had been changed.
Exactly.
And all that,
yeah.
So it's like that. The only thing that was odd for me is that they had, like, the arch and it was, like, busted at the top. And so it's like, it just.
And how
you know,
is there
over.
A busted arch but none of the buildings?
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's not dramatic.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Because the arch is what gets us Midwesterners to watch the show.
You get all riled up when you mess
okay,
the arch.
Last tangent I got for this one, though. The worst one, though, was Identity Thief. That movie that came out just a couple years ago. They drive through St. Louis, and they literally splice together, like, one bridge from another city to... like a fake version of St. Louis. Like it was so stupid. And I was like, why in the world did they do this? And then later on, like they have a scene of them sitting in this restaurant and the arch is in the background. I was like, there's no way that they could have that view of the arch, like from where they are. It's like, they're sitting in East St. Louis. It's like,
yep.
It's like, and there are no giant skyscrapers in East St. Louis. So.
We sure are bougie about our entertainment.
Weird.
It looks like downtown
this is,
Los Angeles.
We
with
totally
an arch.
Sorry if you are just interested in the music history. So let's get on to this.
Get
one.
Get on our level,
Jake. 1978.
1978. Keith Moon plays what turns out to be his last show with The Who.
All right.
And I believe that concert was the same footage that you see in The Kids Are All Right.
Hmm. Mm.
So, of course, in September later, he would take his own life after getting in a fight over steak and eggs with his girlfriend.
Sounds about right.
What? Keith Moon?
Yeah.
Didn't he choke on vomit? His own vomit?
I mean, I guess you could say that's definitely the cause of his death, but he purposely overdosed on sedatives.
I see. So, okay.
He was
so I had
under
one,
the care of a doctor.
One. We put them together, and that's what we get. So he choked on his own vomit after essentially causing himself to do so.
Poor there guy.
Go. Got it.
That's a shame.
Yeah. He was an interesting guy. And mm-hmm. he had
it's a party animal.
Party animal. But he just, yeah. If you get a chance, check out any of the stuff about him, because he lived an incredible life, and he was really like the greatest, worst drummer of all time.
I thought that was me.
No, he's like the most famous, just bad drummer. Like Ringo, at least like everything was on beat. It's like Keith Moon. It's like even in Who's Next, like, which is like just one of the greatest albums ever made. Like there are points where you can hear him playing, and then all of a sudden he changes rhythm or he changes tempo. It's very subtle, Like, he, you know, it's just a couple beats per minute difference, but I can totally hear it every time I listen to some of those songs.
The reason the drummers have that reputation is because of Keith Moon.
Yep, exactly.
Quit speeding up the song, Keith
Actually,
Moon.
Actually, he slowed down, but that's...
Quit slowing down the song, Keith Moon.
Moving on up, 1997, a report showed that Elvis Presley was now the world's best-selling posthumous entertainer with worldwide sales over $1 billion and over 480 active fan clubs and an estimated 250,000 UK fans who still bought his records.
Wow.
Ironically, he died owing $3 million.
Who do you think is going to break that record?
Actually, I was going to talk about his cause of death, but yours is probably better.
That might not, I mean, it might be a while.
Do you think Justin Bieber will posthumously, like, break Elvis's record?
Oh, I'm hoping his career dies well before that. So. I doubt it, but, you know, I mean, I can always hope.
You know, Bieber will probably transition into like a Mark Wahlberg, like in his 40s or something.
Can he just go back?
He will not
to
be
Canada.
As good as Mark Wahlberg.
You know, Mark Wahlberg's a fox.
Justin Bieber can go hang out with Tommy Chong.
And if Mark Wahlberg,
they don't want
him either. If Mark Wahlberg could even remotely sing like he could in the movie Rockstar, I mean, he'd just be a vastly superior artist anyway. So.
But he can rap.
But he can't. So so there's that.
But he's got those good vibrations.
Will Justin Bieber become a Justin Timberlake type? I don't think so.
I doubt it.
No. He doesn't have enough class to be a Timberlake.
Yeah, Justin Timberlake has class, and that's the difference, is that, you know, he's always been sort of a classy dude.
But Justin Bieber has swag.
Bieber's disposable.
Yeah, honestly, he is.
Can I just throw out my vote for...
go ahead.
Maybe Prince? With
actually,
his,
yeah.
His vault of music.
His vault of music that nobody's heard. So, yeah, Prince Prince might actually beat
Or I
that
should
one.
Say, with his, but, air quotes, well-known vault of music no one's heard that they can keep making. No? Okay, all right, never mind. But seriously, no. So, all right. So this vault is like so famous.
It's like Al Capone's. We're open. Right. I mean, nothing in it.
You could take just a vocal track that he threw down of him going, and then put anything behind it and release it as an album.
According to Kevin Smith, every room in the Paisley Park thing was rigged to be able to record. Every room. So if Prince wanted to record in the bathroom, he could.
You get really good acoustics in the bathroom. I don't blame him.
Just saying.
Like, I would not want to be a guest in that home. That'd be awkward.
Yeah. No, I think what it was is just that you could actually like set it up to where you could like plug in and record.
Oh. So it's not like I would be using
it. It's not like there were microphones just everywhere and he was like, all right, this is where, you know.
Like, there's going to be a Prince album that comes out like 10 years later and they're going to take the audio of me in the bathroom just like,
Apollonia singing in the shower.
All right, let's move on to May 26. What do we got, Jake?
Ooh, here we go. 1886, Al Jolson is born in Lithuania. His family later moves to the U.S., and he changes his name from whatever it was originally.
Some of my people come from Lithuania.
Do they now?
Yeah.
And, I mean, am I the only one here that has heard of Al Jolson?
Yep.
Okay.
Maybe so.
Can you tell him by blinking?
Yes, I can, actually. It was... completely distracting. All right. So Al Jolson was probably the first like legit superstar recording artist. He cut his teeth in vaudeville. And if you were a Jewish singer in vaudeville, that meant you performed in blackface. Right. Mm. So a lot of his songs were Mammy, Down the Suwannee River. And they were some of the earliest like recordings that were actually sold in the U.S.
Wow.
He was also the gentleman who was in the original Jazz Singer musical, and he had a career all the way till his death, really.
This is early moments in racism.
There you go. Well,
yeah, I didn't realize that Lithuanians were so cultured on the subject.
It was just a standard of stuff back then that people did to be really bad.
Glad people don't do that anymore.
Well, they didn't even think about it back then. It didn't even occur to them.
Well, there is...
Now it's called transracial, so...
Well, when you talk about Al Jolson's music, there is sort of a undertone of mutual suffering where you could argue he's introducing audiences to like the plight of people who aren't allowed to be in your theater. And so way on down upon the Suwannee River, it is really about segregation.
It is, but I don't know. Where that gets into a whole different...
Personally, I think it's a really beautiful melody.
It is a beautiful song, but yeah. It's not for a Jew in blackface to be performing as,
well,
you know. It's...
No, I'm not saying I don't find it distasteful. I do. But, I mean, I'm also three generations removed from it.
Fair, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you take anyone who was a progressive in their time, like Teddy Roosevelt, and put him in today's time frame, and he looks like a screaming racist.
Fair, yeah.
That's because he was a screaming racist.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, three generations from now, I'll probably be seen as a screaming racist.
You can't use the Teddy Roosevelt one because he was a Republican. Everybody knows that all Republicans are racist.
Somebody's going to listen to these podcasts like 50 years from now.
Well, yeah, he's still
like, I can't believe they said that.
I can't believe Jake was such a racist on that podcast.
I'm not defending jingoism, but he did craft Liberia, which was like one of the only independent nations in Africa for a good 100 years. So.
Just saying, if anybody wants to understand exactly how racist Teddy Roosevelt was, all they need to do is actually look at the real story of the Rough Riders charging San Juan Hill. Because basically Blackjack Pershing, who had an all-black outfit, had pretty much taken the entire hill. And Roosevelt was just like, hey, man, we can't let those dudes take all the glory for this. And so then they rode up, mopped up, you know, what few people were still remaining, and then took all the glory for themselves. And then Pershing was never won anything for it.
White people are really good at stealing stuff.
I have heard that. So
yeah, but he stole it from a white person.
I have heard that story before,
black
too.
Unit.
Yeah.
There you go. We strayed off into regular history, not music history. But
fair enough.
I'm sure Teddy Roosevelt did something musical at some point, but whatever. Who cares? Let's see. Moving on. 1926, born on this day, the great Miles Davis.
Ta-da!
There's no applause there. So.
No, there was. I was waiting for you.
So, of course, Miles Davis played trumpet. He was a composer. Tons of albums that each one of them was great in and of their own right. He always was in the process of changing his style to what he wanted it to be, and was an ever-evolving musician and just fascinating dude. And there was recently a movie done about him. I'm blanking on the name of it, but you can search for Miles Davis movie and you will find it. And it was really cool. He was, you know, obviously a forward-thinking musician in his own time. But the reason why he's also more special to us is because he was born in the area and he lived here for a good while,
mm-hmm.
even though he didn't die here. But he was originally born in Alton, Illinois, and lived in East St. Louis. So
I felt like we heard recently that there was going to be a Miles Davis tribute. Remember we were in the park the other day?
Yeah.
I don't remember where that was at, though. Do you recall?
No, I don't. The movie was called Miles Ahead.
That is true.
In 2015.
Yep. Starred Don Cheadle and Ewan McGregor. See, that I remember. I just can't remember the name of the movie.
I just can't remember where the Miles Davis tribute is going to be.
But if you watch that movie, though, it's all about him in the later part of his life. And Ewan McGregor is like a reporter and he's trying to like get a story and stuff. And it's just, It's really cool, how it all sort of plays out. But Don Cheadle as Miles Davis is just captivating.
I bet.
It's just great.
The Miles Davis tribute is actually coming up. It's at that jazz club by the Fox Theater.
Yeah,
that's where it was.
Jazz at the Bistro.
That's
Jazz
it.
At the Bistro, yep.
That's it.
They have a Miles Davis tribute coming up soon.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And an Ella Fitzgerald one, apparently, I believe.
Yeah. It seems that
Brian Croc likes to go to Jazz at the Bistro when he's in town.
Does he?
Yes.
Ah.
I'm not even remotely kidding.
Whoa.
There is another guy out there named Brian Croc, and he actually is a jazz musician, and he was recently in town, and so he and I are friends on Facebook.
I saw your picture.
And we met up. we had lunch, and it was a blast. But he used to go down to Jazz at the Bistro and stuff, and so he actually went there like his first night he got into St. Louis.
Is it also Croc with a K?
Yeah. Spelled exactly the same
way.
The
meeting of the Crocs.
And we got a photo together, and we're basically like wearing the same colors, and we both have glasses, we both have beards. I'm a couple inches taller than him, so... You want to meet another Bree Park?
Yeah.
I'm sure you could find one. Huh. It's fascinating. So I joke around, and I told him that, you know, hey, I've got this podcast, and he goes, oh, I love listening to podcasts. And I was like, well, then you got to listen to ours.
I love making the podcast.
So, Brian, if you're listening to this, comment or something on Facebook and let me know that you heard it.
And if your name is Bree Park.
It was great meeting you. And if there's another Bree Park out there who somehow happens to get this, do the exact same thing.
I want to meet you. Let's be friends.
And meet Bree Park. All right. Let's move on. 1940, born on this day, Levon Helm, drummer for the band.
I love him. There's a really good documentary about him. I wish I could remember what
it's
called.
I ain't in it for my health.
That's it. That is a wonderful, wonderful documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Good stuff. I'm super happy that I stumbled upon to the band and Levon Helm.
I love the band.
And I love listening to it. Of course, we did album review for the band here on Follow the Sound. You can go back and listen to that if you so feel like. We did it for their self-titled album, which is just a brilliant album.
Yeah, it's super good. I think that that documentary, it might still be on Netflix.
I think it is. It should be.
Definitely worth an afternoon. It was so, so good.
Yes, yes. And of course, he also did some really good acting bits too.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Born in 1948, Stevie Nicks, singer for Fleetwood Mac.
She's marvelous. Nicks.
And Buckingham Nicks.
Mm-hmm.
See,
she's
now
an icon.
I will call her an icon. That is true. I'm not going to call her great though. I'm sorry.
I mean great in a way that, like, I enjoy her as a whole human. I don't know that if I went and saw her perform today that I would be like, you're great. Because, I mean, she's aged and
for me, the only reason why she was great is because of Lindsey Buckingham.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason why she is an icon is because Lindsey was able to translate her songs into something that was actually presentable.
Yeah, I won't deny you on that.
That's totally...
She is an icon, though.
She is an icon, but she's an icon because of somebody else's brilliance. So,
well, so is Kanye West.
Yeah, huh, that's true.
That's not Stevie Nicks.
Boom.
That's Steamy Nicks.
So there you go. That's just... Stevie, like, you know, I'll give her respect for what she's done, but at the same time, it's like, I'm just not like a fan of hers. So that is what it is. But at the same time, when she is with Fleetwood Mac, it's awesome because it's Fleetwood Mac, you know, it's the group of them together that created something that powerful. But like on her solo stuff, basically it's the, you know, White Winged Dove, like that's basically the only song that I actually know of hers.
On Edge and 17.
Thank you.
Yeah, which is also then funny because she actually uses that phrase "white winged dove" in like a bunch of songs.
Hmm.
It's like one of her go-to phrases for whenever she needs to describe something. Like,
everything's like a white winged dove.
That's her catchphrase.
She sings the song. It sounds like she's singing.
At the same time, Lindsey has done the same thing as well. So it's, you know, it's here and there. But
is that why like people still talking about Stevie Nicks being like a Wiccan and a witch is because...
It's because of the song Rhiannon.
Oh, okay.
The one I was supposed to be named after.
It was supposedly a song written about a woman who was accused of being a witch. And so that's like how they... Yeah.
Wow, much less interesting than I thought.
Does she weigh more than a duck?
Gold Dust Woman isn't that bad, though. That's a pretty good song.
Does she float?
Yep.
She All right. Turned me into
On this
Nick.
Day, 1958, we teased this earlier in the show.
Well, okay. Well, I was going to knock out the birthdays first, and then
you want to hit the last birthday?
Yeah, I want to do the last birthday.
Go right ahead.
So, and because this one will be pretty short All anyway. Right. 1964, born on this day, Lenny Kravitz.
Nothing short about Lenny Kravitz.
Sorry, you're going to have to edit out my cackle.
Was that a part of the plaster caster? Is he in that group?
No, he's not in the list. I looked through the whole list.
There is a picture, though, of he was wearing some purple leather pants at a performance, and he went down for a power slide, and the pants just split at the seam, and all Lenny and all of the Kravitz came out onto the
Lenny
stage.
Lenny and the Kravitz came
yeah.
out.
Yeah, 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 Lenny and the Kravitz.
Lenny wow. Kravitz, half Jewish. That's a fun fact.
Mm-hmm. I know that now.
Oh, geez.
Wow. There has been too much talk about this show.
None of it's my fault.
It's good.
Doesn't
move on. Jake, what happened in 1958?
1958. We teased it earlier in the show. Jerry Lee Lewis, at his third show, 4 days after setting foot in the UK, is booed off stage in what becomes the last show of the UK tour.
Yep.
There you go.
According
guys.
To the movie Great Balls of Fire, mm-hmm. somebody rolled out a stroller on stage.
Ooh. That
yeah.
burns.
Yeah.
Good yeah. one.
So there you go.
I hope it was worth like waiting in line and walking through an entire auditorium with a stroller. No child so, in it or, now, or a doll or whatever.
Now, if I remember, Jerry Lee Lewis, like, I mean, it's kind of funny because I'm trying to remember facts about his life and then I'm also remembering the movie. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to remember, like, what is actually, like, real. But I believe, like, another relative of his was actually really famous. But I'm totally blanking. Yeah, I'm going to have to search this one later on. Or if my dad knows, please contact me. Because I might not find it before
Well, I
that
think
happens.
We've talked enough about that asshole.
Yeah, that's pretty true. I mean, it's just, you know, is what it is.
Jerry Lee Lewis, not your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been very bad. Glad you specified that one. So my dad's going to be like...
I got you back, Jacob.
Thanks.
My dad's going to be like, what did you call me?
It should be apparent to listeners of the show that I have the giant... man crush on Adam Croc. So that but thanks.
What guy doesn't?
Truth be told. 1973.
He's a handsome man. His voice is booming and everybody is attracted to it. All right, I'm done.
Okay. 1973. Edgar Winter.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got one in between then.
Oh, Christ.
I got right. 1966, actually. That's me. Sorry. The Beatles record Yellow Submarine at Abbey Road, 1966, in London. George Martin was recovering from a case of food poisoning and missed the recording, and so EMI engineer Jeff Emmerich worked on the session. The track features John Lennon blowing bubbles in a bucket of water and shouting, "Full speed ahead, Mr. Captain!"
Ha! In the town that I was born.
That used wow. to be my son's favorite song. Every time he'd get in the bathtub, I had to play Yellow Submarine.
We all live in a yellow submarine.
It could have been much worse than that.
Oh, I wasn't complaining at all.
Like,
I was so
I mean,
proud
have
of
you
him.
Heard the Wiggles? Oh, God.
Oh, I would rather listen to Yellow Submarine over Hot Potato any day.
It's Hot Potato. Come on.
That depends on where you're from.
Well, Jacob, big yellow boat.
Yeah.
Big yellow
boat. Well, in a big yellow boat, yeah.
All right, Jake, 1973.
Oh, I get to talk about Edgar Winter now.
Yes, talk about Edgar
okay,
Winter
Okay, well, guess what he did in 1973? On this day in history, Frankenstein hits number one. And the world was forever changed.
Drum solo! True.
See, now, okay, the one that throws me off, because there's another Alice Cooper song. Right.
Feed my Frankenstein.
Be my Frankenstein.
Feed
my Frankenstein.
Yeah. Hunger for love and
feed
it's feeding time.
Frankenstein. Yeah.
Yes. But
Frankenstein, yeah, it's a completely different song.
Yeah. Edgar Winter's Frankenstein's instrumental. It's got a couple of great solos, especially the drum solo I love in there. Also, Edgar Winter, one of the few famous albinos out there.
That is true.
Yeah.
I had not thought of it in those terms.
They're an underrepresented community.
Okay, yeah.
A minority.
Okay, sure.
I mean, he could be probably one of the most famous.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, a quick Google search could change that story, but we could find out that like the most famous albino was, you know, in 1722 and toured the world. And...
Yeah, that's possible.
The most famous albino is Powder. Everybody knows this.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that movie.
Powder.
Yeah. Thank you, Walt Disney. As you unravel the twine of the ball that is Powder, you find how disturbing that film is.
Boy.
Oh, nice. My goodness.
So, Edgar Wright, actually, great band.
Well, I mean, who is in Powder? Sorry, I'm blanking on that one.
Oh, no.
Sean Patrick Flannery.
Yeah.
Sean Patrick Flannery. I actually met Sean Patrick Flannery. He was in St. Louis one time, and so that's
all his pretty red hair.
He walked up, and I saw him, and he nodded at me. I nodded back at him, and then that was it.
You weren't like, Powder! Powder!
No, he wasn't like, I mean, I would have more so like quoted something from like Boondock Saints. But
turns out that wasn't his real name.
So he was a cool dude, though. He was nice, at least. He was pleasant to everybody.
Good, 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 good.
All right, that's done. Am I up next? Am I closing
Knock
this
Knock yourself
out?
Out. Let's hear
All
it.
All right, we got it. 1994, continuing on with the story of weird marriages in rock and roll history, we have another weird marriage in rock and roll history. 1994, Michael Jackson marries Lisa Marie Presley, daughter of Elvis. The couple divorced the next year. They had first met when the 7-year-old Presley attended several of Jackson's concerts in Las Vegas.
And they've graced us with the most disgusting public kiss of all time.
Yes, that is true. That is very much true. But you know what? You know what's really bad? And I remember this when this all happened back in the good old 1994. And I hoped that they would actually have a long-lasting relationship.
I did, too. It made sense.
I didn't remember why I thought that.
Nothing about it made sense.
But it did. It's like, you know, sometimes you think, though, that, like, you know, people get married, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, God, this is just doomed from the get-go. Or even worse than that, you're like, you really want it to end.
Super crazy childhoods, ridiculous amounts of fame to be dealt with at a young age.
Yep.
A lot of tragedy in their lives. It made sense that they would get along, and we were all very hopeful that that was going to be some people that, like, who, you know, not he found to, someone, thank goodness.
Not to mention, like, that child, you know, like, if they'd actually had a child together, mm-hmm. it's like, that would have been kind of amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the genes of Elvis and the genes of the Jackson family, like, combined.
The Messiah was born.
Like, basically, that child would have been completely destined for fame.
I still think Tito would be a better father, but hey.
That's quite possible, too. But, I mean, anything's better off than basically the kids that Jackson did end up having, because they don't appear to be doing
actually,
anything.
Actually, I have to take that back. I think that Jackie Jackson is a real class act.
I think Paris Jackson just recently, like, she posted some photos about a garden or something, and, like, that was...
I'm glad that they're able to live normal-ish lives, honestly.
I think the only reason why they can live normal-ish lives is because he died.
Well, I'm sure, but, you know, I haven't heard much from Blanket, but as far as Paris goes, she just seems to be able to
Paris seems to be
on.
Handling it a little bit better than like Prince Jackson, so
yeah,
but is and then Blanket, who knows. So but yes, that was the weird thing. I remember when it happened, and I was actually really hoping that they would have a good, like, long-lasting marriage, but then of course it was doomed pretty quickly. So but in their defense, they did have a longer lasting marriage than Kim Kardashian did to her second husband.
And Britney Spears to her first husband.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That was a day.
And again, they gave us one of the best BMA moments in history.
Mm-hmm.
Most barf-worthy moment.
Most barf-worthy moment.
1994.
Isn't that one weird music video, too, that she was in?
Was she in the one where, I remember the time, was she in that one?
What is it? Wasn't
it like
the
Egyptian themed, and she was serving him something? Is that?
This, I remember something like that, and like they were both naked or something.
Yeah, I was
like,
remember the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's it. That's all of the facts that we got today. This has been one of the weirdest shows we've done. I'm calling that one right now.
This show, want me to come back?
This is the show that you're thankful that there's no video to accompany it?
Oh, good God.
No visuals here.
But No, it's still a fun show either way.
I made it for you, but the heathen in me is thoroughly disappointed.
It was still a fun show. It's just that it was, like, messed up, so, yeah.
You're welcome.
But
once again, no one can see what you're doing.
I take full responsibility.
Full responsibility for this one, Jake.
Okay, then I'm coming back.
So, yeah. No, I mean, my offer still stands. You can come back whenever you want, so... But you know, this has been This Week in Music History on Follow the Sound. Of course, I am your host, Brian Kroc. Thank you for sticking with us for all of this time. If you want to help out the show, you can go to our website, followthesoundpodcast.com, and click on the Amazon banner. It takes you to Amazon. You can do all your normal shopping. It won't cost you anything extra. We get a little bit of money back. It's that simple. Boom. Simple, easy, done. We get a little bit of money. You get your stuff. So you can go to the website, click on the banner, or you can go to followthesoundpodcast.com/Amazon, and it'll take you to the exact same place. Also want to thank lineupmedia.fm for allowing us to do the show. You can check out all of their great programming at lineupmedia.fm, where you can find such great shows as Armenian Night. Now, you may be thinking, I'm not Armenian. Doesn't matter. These dudes are hilarious. So they do sketch comedy. They do, like, they're all comedians in their own right. They do great little funny interviews and stuff. Just good, good stuff that pops up. So I'm quite happy that we have their show on our network. It's a good thing. So check out lineupmedia.fm for any of your shows that you might want to possibly look at, especially if you're into sports. We've got a lot of good sports shows as well. But this has been Follow the Sound. I have been your host, Brian Kroc, who is sitting here acting normal while all of this insanity is going on around me. And creating that insanity is none other than Jacob Crum.
You are not alone.
And Greg Harvey.
Let's talk about God, baby.
And Bree Park.
I got nothing.
Remember, if you hear it, follow the sound.
This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.